Today's show is brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, sharing nothing but the best in whole grain nutrition and committed to their mission of good food for all. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
What a beautiful day in Brooklyn.
So gorgeous.
Yeah, man. Wait, I just noticed something.
What's that?
You don't have your sling on anymore.
Second day I've not had the sling on.
Wow, man. How many one-arm push-ups can you do now?
10 times as many as I used to could do.
How many is that?
Zero.
Oh. Well, that's Vitor all the way.
Thanks for opening the show, Vitor. You know, crack in with comedy. How have you been, man? You were gone for a week again, West Coast.
It's like a weekend. Memorial Day, man.
All right.
It was at a wedding. It was great. Didn't do any work stuff.
But your band played. You don't consider that work?
Played, yeah. No. Yeah, sometimes. Depends. If you're on tour, yes. It's like,
well, you were in an RV.
Well, we were, yeah. It was fun. Played in Ojai. Ojai's a cool town.
Mm-hmm.
You ever been there?
I have not.
You should go.
Well, next time you go, I'll go.
Yeah, you could be our
I should have went this time.
You can carry all the amps.
I couldn't work. I should have went this time.
One guitar at a time. Yeah, man. So congratulations on that, man.
Yeah.
So you're going to get... Are you doing your
PT?
Yeah, your...
Starts next week. Next week today. Wednesday. Next Wednesday. So I'll probably be... Maybe hopefully in tears when I come to the show next week.
Well, you're going to be anyway. Because my birthday is the day after.
That's so right. We're going to be so that's well, let's see. That's great. It's a perfect day to start PT. Then I can just self-medicate.
Yep, exactly.
It's,
well,
it's a focused PT program shaking and stirring and right. Bottle lifting.
For sure.
That's right. Well, to remind everybody, my doctor said we'll be starting aggressive PT. And when I said, what's aggressive mean? He just said, painful.
Yeah.
Well, that lovely voice that you're hearing, other than Souther's and myself, is Katie Stipe. Welcome to the show, Katie.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's about time.
Yeah, it's about
time. It's about damn time. That's what I told Damon.
Yeah. I can't believe that you haven't been on the show before. That's insane to me.
It seems unusual.
But we've worked together at, like, how many different bars now? Like, we're just always around each other.
Yeah, well, you know, we've shared the same village for many, many years, and... You know, I lived in Carroll Gardens and have for close to a decade, if not more, when you were in Red Hook and...
In Carroll Gardens,
in
too.
In Carroll Gardens, and... Still. Yeah, first time we worked together was at Prime Eats, mm-hmm. officially, so...
And then we worked together at...
Same.
At the Ludlow for a hot
second.
Oh,
there was a brief moment that we worked an opening at the Ludlow Hotel, Dirty French.
That was my only, first and only hotel gig. I did it because I wanted to check it out.
Yeah.
See what it's like.
It was a taste of the Lower East Side.
Yeah, for sure.
I live one block from that place.
Dude, it was pretty cool, actually, all things considered. And then you helped me out with the opening of Grand Army.
Yeah.
And since then, you've moved on to do all kinds of other cool stuff, like Pick Beach and La Serena now. And you know what? Okay. I don't know. I haven't been to that spot yet, but I know that a few of
it's
our
too
friends
late now.
Yeah, there's things move fast,
yeah.
And they're moving faster exponentially for me for a lot of reasons. But
in the hourglass is running out.
Yeah. It's like a farewell tour right now for me as I'm preparing to break up with New York City. So I spent 2 months at La Serena with a great mutual friend, Max Cotrone, who we worked with at Prime Eats and Frankie's, who's larger than life and has amazing charismatic energy. So that's how I ended up there running the program. And it's a beast, that's for sure. It's a huge space in the Maritime Building, Chelsea Meatpacking District, entirely different clientele than we experience in our lovely bubble of Brooklyn. But it was a challenge, that's for sure. But, you know, the bar team that was there and had been there, and the bar backs, you know, worked extremely hard and very positive, and, you know, set them up with a really beautiful spring menu, and, you know, and try to reinforce so they can move forward into what's a very busy season for them and, you know, conquer.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Cool.
You know, I've been through many, many openings, and I think people that know me now know that I've been going from job to job to job, whether it's consulting or seasonal, and it's in so many openings. I don't know if it's like I like to torture myself or what that's about, or it's about like the energy and the excitement of the opening, and I really think that's what
it's a combination of both those things.
Yeah.
There's
problem solving.
Exactly. Like, I get off on it. Like, I love that feeling of having to solve all those problems, have to take on those things, and then there's this weird like little like sigh of relief / slight depression when the thing gets opened, and you're like, oh, I got no problems to solve right now, but then the new problems start happening.
Yeah,
you just keep going.
Another place.
You get to keep going.
Yeah, I think like after that many openings, you're like probably the most primed to like open up your own spot. You know, you basically
or walk away from it forever.
Or that. Yeah. Yeah, I mean. Those are both options for sure.
So let's reel the clock backwards first, though. Let's talk about the beginning of your journey here in New York City, or how'd you get here in the first place? You're not from here.
No. I grew up in the Southwest. I was born in Phoenix. Grew up in Vegas, in a land of dry, hot air and no seasons, no mosquitoes either, which that's one of the only things I miss about Vegas. But yeah, I grew up dancing and the discipline of, you know, jazz, modern, tap, ballet, and competing, and that's how I spent every day, all day and all night after school, and huge part of my life and upbringing, and, you know, what ultimately brought me here to New York. Went to school in Dallas, Texas, and like I said earlier, I was, you know, contemplating moving to Chicago because there's some fantastic modern and jazz-based companies out there, which for me is what I excelled at when I was, dancing. But worked on a cruise ship in the Eastern Caribbean, saved up a bunch of money, made some friends that lived in Astoria, Queens, and like any other performing arts, you know, stars in their eyes, came to New York and started auditioning in 2001. So it's been 16 years now, and
Now you're like, let's do it. Your New York stint is old enough to drive now.
Completely.
Right.
Yeah, and that's what's exciting is, you know, getting to drive again you know, when I leave New York is getting that Jeep I always wanted or that escape vehicle.
Right. Let's jump into the end. Let's stay at the beginning, right?
Yeah.
So now we're up to you've arrived in New York. What pushed you from, you know, your career as a dancer into this now pretty lengthy career behind bars?
Yeah.
The good kind. The good kind.
When I did get to New York, you know, I was auditioning and did some, ended up doing more musical theater. And given that was not my passion or my background per se, but I had good enough chops that I could like sing with the chorus and hang. And, you know, dancing was certainly my strength. And yeah, I mean, being on stage and entertaining and performance was like the end goal and the greatest satisfaction. And when you're an artist performer, like, you know, that's just the greatest feeling being on stage. And I think that carries over into what we do in hospitality also.
Yeah, absolutely. Common analogy.
Sure. And so, yeah, I was working in bars and restaurants here while I was auditioning. One of my first bar gigs here was at the Campbell Apartment in Grand Central Station.
Oh, wow.
Given I wasn't bartending because there were no women behind that bar, but I was a server there. And that's back in like the cigar bar days when they still, like, we did, you know, formal cigar service, and I was just making fantastic money. And
yeah, that space is beautiful.
Yeah.
And historic.
It's a historical landmark. Absolutely. It was John Campbell's, you know, ground floor office space in Grand Central. So that was like, you know, kind of one of the first lounge nightlife gigs that I had that was somewhat cocktail centric, but nothing on par with what, you know, I ended up walking into. So, you know, I had been pursuing and auditioning and touring, and every time come back, you know, look for a new job while you, you know, try to land your next gig. And I would pull up, like, I would buy the Zagat guide. Like, that's how long ago it was. And, like, you would kind of just, like, or go through Village Voice, and you would, like, kind of scan through, like, what types of places you wanted to maybe go drop your resume off and, like, pound the pavement. And that's what I did. And there was, you know, a new cocktail art deco lounge called Flatiron Lounge, that was listed, and I was like, oh, well, there's no kitchen, there's no fussy food service, like, I can hustle, I can carry a tray, like, I can do this, I can be this. And I walked in and happened to meet Julie Reiner that day, and we sat down at a table, and, you know, a lot of it is just history. But, you know, she wasn't even hiring, but she met a 6-foot blonde that walked in the door, and she was hiring at that moment.
Yeah.
So that was my introduction into, you know, the cocktail movement. And I think we all know
at the right time, like, that's when it was, you know.
Yeah, it was the opening of Flatiron. I came in, you know, just a touch later as they were expanding their space, and I started as a cocktail server there, and you know, hustled and learned what was in all the drinks, and, you know, told Julie that I was ready to step behind the bar and start, you know, producing the drinks and learning. And as we all know, she's one of the greatest mentors, not just for bar family, but, you know, supporters of women in the industry.
Absolutely.
And this goes back, you know, well over a decade ago. And so she took me under her wing and, you know, has been a mentor and a friend. And even still to this day, her and Sue Fedroff are family to me. And it's amazing what they've accomplished, and to be a part of what Flatiron was, and to be an integral part in, like, this entire renaissance and movement that we all live in and experience today.
Yeah. So when you were in there and you were cocktail serving and you, you know, showed some, you know, interest in the drinks and stuff like that, was it your intent to move behind the bar? You were still dancing or trying to dance, right? Did you want to give up the sort of, like, I feel like there's more flexibility with cocktail serving.
Yeah, I think I was on the cusp there. You know, my head kind of turned and I was intrigued by something else. And it really was when I got behind the bar and, I mean, being a high volume cocktail bar, the athleticism that is required to do a job like that, and, you know, the education and intellect that goes into it as well. And, you know, spent time training my palate and found this whole other kind of creative role that I didn't know I had, but it was all kind of slowly building and evolving for me. So, yeah, it was just a natural movement from me behind the bar. And, you know, I was always really good at hustling. Like, you know, when I worked on the floor as a cocktail server at Flatiron, me and Chrissy Lopez, we made so much money that all the bartenders were just pissed off because we weren't a pool house. And, nice. You know, we were bringing in the dough. And obviously I know that the bartenders are producing all the drinks, but we crushed it.
Nice.
And so eventually they're like, yeah, let's be one big family. And you and Chrissy Lopez get behind the bar and do that hustle. And, like, and we totally did. And,
That,
you know, that training, that experience, you know, being in a high volume cocktail bar as your education, also in a time and a place where, you know, we were learning through trial and error. It was me and it was Julie and it was Phil, you know, and a few other handful of people that we were learning as we went, you know. And, you know, our guests were guinea pigs in kind of a way that was like digging up, like, in Dale's book and Gary Regan's book and, like, you know, old school recipes and readapting them and training our own palates at the same time as, you know, kind of introducing cocktails and balance to our guests. So, you know, as simple and basic as a sidecar sounds or like a French 75 or all of these.
If it's new to you, it's new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was very much learning from the basics, and it's everything that I take today when I develop cocktails is those very basic templates of classics and balance. And that is the foundation and backbone of being a bartender. Yeah. You have to know it before you can.
Well, speaking of that, one of the things that we have, Robert Samson has an app, you know, it's called Modern Classics at the Cocktail Renaissance. So I know that you've got one or two in there. And to me, like, I was just out in California last weekend and I was at a restaurant and they had a siesta on the menu and they had your name, like it was credited to you.
Yeah.
And it was just like a kind of like a little like hole in the wall, like Tex-Mex place. And they had the siesta on the menu.
I love that shit.
I know. Right. So
I'm always tickled when I see that shit.
So it's funny that you like came in such a very like ground level, like entry level, like kind of innocent way to like having one of your like signature cocktails on all these menus all over the place.
Sure. And
that's
also
gotta feel crazy, right?
One of the recipes in my whole broad, you know, lifespan of development, like one of the first recipes I ever came up with, you know, which is, you know, that was like going back to the baby steps basics. And then, you know, that's what's so funny is like, of everything I've done, that's the one that really stuck.
Tell us about the siesta real fast.
The siesta, you know, again, was building off a classic template and pulling out an ingredient, putting in another ingredient, and pulling out a modifier and replacing it with the next. And those are the building blocks of cocktail and recipe development. So it was the Hemingway daiquiri. And using the Hemingway daiquiri template, pulling out the rum and replacing that with a Blanco tequila. And pulling out your maraschino modifier and replacing that with Campari. And, you know, agave spirits and agave cocktails, you know, really didn't have much of a repertoire.
Back then?
That far, yeah.
Yeah.
Back then, you know, you had a lot of whiskey, you had a lot of brandy, you had a lot of rum, you had a lot of gin. But, you know, the agave category had not been really pioneered yet. So that was kind of one of the first aha moments. And of course, like that drink makes so much sense and can be so universal because it can be replicated anywhere, you know?
Yeah, any bar.
Any bar has Blanco. We all can find grapefruit, lime, sugar, and Campari is obviously widely available. So yeah, I know that in California, and I've heard that like that drink is very popular and it's always surprising. And, you know, I got a photo of like it being served in Australia. And so it's really rewarding and always surprising. And it just kind of makes me giggle, too, because it's like, oh, it's like, you know, one of the first drinks I ever made up. But it's funny that like after all the work and time and effort, like
it was
the most simplistic drink that, you know, has become like a modern classic. And that's pretty damn cool.
It's really damn cool.
It's fucking amazing. All right. We are at the midpoint-ish. So we're going to take a break and hear from our sponsor, which I believe is, what did they say? Bob's Red Mill today, right?
I think so, yeah.
Could be.
Yep.
Maybe not.
It is.
Maybe I'm just plugging them for nothing. All right. So we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with Katie Stipe, and then we're going to talk about Sherry.
Yeah
we got to crack this bottle.
Yeah.
Don't go in for understanding when you are away. Can't use my heart to think away the time. In my room I will await you, and so soon I will relate you. And tie your finger right on up to mine.
Bob's Red Mill is a proud sponsor of Heritage Radio Network and a big supporter of organic farmers. Ray and Tom Williams are two farmers who have worked with Bob for years and co-own an organic farm in Eastern Oregon and Washington. Ray shares what their relationship with Bob's Red Mill means to them.
We thought that for over the long term, we thought it would make sense, better sense for the soil. Also, we thought that it was something that would improve the quality of the food supply. We're lucky in that we're working with Bob's Red Mill. We're part of a regional food network. With Bob is a fundamental relationship. And cornerstone to that, we also work with other best-of-class people in the Northwest, and we're thankful for the long-term relationship that's brought good things to the soil and good things to our long-term farm economic plans. We appreciate his attitude toward absolutely high standard for the benefit of his customers. We take pride in meeting those standards.
Learn more about Bob's Red Mill and their commitment to good food for all at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy. And in the studio today, we have our dear friend, Katie Stipe. We've just been talking about her path into The cocktail world?
From one dance to another.
One
stage to another.
Yeah. That was always the funny thing. Like, for anyone who's had the privilege of working with you, Katie, like, I'm sure they all would agree. Like, whenever I always loved working with you, especially at Primies, like, because there wasn't a lot of room back there, but we always had a really good dance. And then, like, the same thing happened at, because you have to dance with,
of course,
with your bar backs.
I literally call the back bar at Amore Margo the dance floor.
Sure. Yeah. It's an awareness of space and sharing space. And yeah, when you find like a good flow. And I really think, you know, going back to my dance roots, like, every bar and every menu has choreography. It's like, you know how you learn recipes and the way that you build them, you pick up things and you do it in the same order, and you find this this rhythm that you have. And it really is, there's this turn and reach, and there's this pickup, and there's this dash. And so it's like, it ends up being this kind of like really cool dance, if you know.
The most dangerous dance.
Yes. More so than Capoeira. I remember the same thing too. We worked behind that bar a couple of times, and to work behind the bar with you versus Damon versus Karen Fu, who used to basically whip me with her ponytail.
Yep, all the time.
That was purely intentional, I'm sure.
She would spin, and that ponytail would just be like, and it is. So it is one dance to another, one stage to another, and so then you got into. Well, you brought us some sherry because you're a huge sherry fan. You want to talk about that at all? You want to pour us some while we talk about it?
I would love to. I did bring a cold bottle of Manzanilla sherry because it just seemed appropriate on a beautiful day like this.
Cool.
I can do it if you want to talk.
Oh, okay. My introduction to sherry, again, goes back to like Flatiron days when Steve Olson was holding a sherry cocktail competition. Jacques from San Francisco won that first competition with a drink called the La Perla, which was Reposado tequila, Manzanilla sherry, and a little bit of pear eau de vie, and just stirred up with a twist, and it was just a beautiful, sexy, simplistic cocktail. And that was the first time that I had been introduced to sherry and the flavor profiles and components of it, and it was really through the vehicle of a cocktail, again, that it was introduced to me. So, Steve Olson has been fundamental in educating and mentoring me and sherry.
And everyone,
like, yeah.
That's the drum that he beats on.
Yeah. So for years, I've just been a voluntary ambassador and cheerleader for sherry in the sherry category. We all find certain spirits or a niche or a style or technique that we, you know, after being educated, that we want to challenge ourselves more so and continue to educate not only ourselves but others. And sherry really has been that for me. When I picked up sherry and I started tasting it, I felt like it had all the complexity of a cocktail in one bottle, and there's so much history and so many layers to it that I was really fascinated by it. And anybody that knows me or spends time with me outside of work or at work, you know, I don't drink cocktails per se. I might like enjoy a classic or three ingredient classic, but I'm generally consuming like delicious wine or beer. So perhaps that was a part of my transition into sherry. But it really is and has become a special part of my experience in the industry, you know, getting to travel to Spain and see it and taste it and meet the producers and just feel like this vibrance that is that region where sherry is produced is unparalleled. And, you know, for anybody who gets that opportunity,
How many times have you been over?
I've been to sherry country at least three, maybe four times, Spain four or five times. And every time it's just as good as the next.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I have only visited Spain once and kind of changed my DNA. I drank a lot of sherry and I drank a lot of gin tonics.
It's up on my list, man.
I told you, I was there for 6 days, and the last 2 days I spent several hours each day looking at apartments. I was like, fuck it, I'm moving.
Nice.
This is where it's at.
Yeah, I mean, for people, us in our industry of enjoying life and food and socialization and drinking, like, that really embraces their whole culture and social culture and, you know, the tapas culture. So going to Sherry, it's just like going to tapas bars and, you know, having a little caña o shorty of beer. And, you know, it's 100 degrees outside. And so, of course, you want to, like, drink, you know, freezing cold Fino or Manzanilla because it's so, like, just delicious and makes sense and pairs right. so well with the food. And so, yeah, I've kind of created this journey of, you know, educating friends, educating guests on what sherry is, because it is very much a misunderstood wine and category, just like mezcal was years ago. And I've been fortunate to work in and be a part of different concepts that are like regional or spirit focused. And that's something I found that I really enjoyed being a part of, you know, whether it was Mayoel or Von Dog, Mayoel being, you know, when the first tequila mezcal cocktail bars and, you know, agave centric menu. And it took a lot of time and effort and education to make that work. Mm-hmm. And then going to Von Dog and doing this, like, really esoteric.
That
but
place was great.
You know,
that
building a cocktail program, which was all very short-lived, but very, very powerful and an amazing experience of, like, you know, aquavit and Unaver gin and building a cocktail menu based upon that and convincing people that, yes, like, of course it's delicious. We should all be drinking, like, Bull's Unaver gin cocktails and, you know.
But that
I mean, that,
that
place still resonates.
Oh,
that
yeah,
place was amazing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, again, it was being a pioneer in an unknown spirit category.
Yeah, and it was genius, and then it was a bit misunderstood, which is common with genius, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
And you know, for years, that's what sherry has been. And
we also, I mean, you were in the early days of Bourgeois Pig, right?
Yeah, I did work at Bourgeois Pig.
Which was an entire menu
sure.
that was just beer, wine,
when
cocktails.
I left Flatiron Lounge, you know, to go back to Flatiron Lounge days, I sat Julie down and I said, Julie, it's time, you know, that I step away and do my own thing and run a program. And I'm going to go to the East Village and... you know, run this program at a place called the Bourgeois Pig. And the Bourgeois Pig was working off a beer and wine license, didn't have a full liquor license. So that was certainly a challenge in building, like, a diverse cocktail program just based upon, you know, beer and wine. And that was something that really had never been done or wasn't being done. You know, it's kind of using all the tools and all of your knowledge to, you know, to impress New Yorkers who, you right. know, have very savvy, adventurous palates. And there was a really amazing response to that. And so, of course, you know, fortified wines and sherries were incorporated into that program. And that was, again, another exercise in the development of sherry cocktails. So, yeah, that was my experience at Bourgeois Pig. But, you know, I outgrew that pretty quickly because I needed a lot more tools and instruments to work with and
sure.
some higher proof spirits as well.
Yeah.
But that, again, that place resonated for a long time. It only yeah. left because Ravi, my partner, it turned everything vegan and the Bourgeois Pig was a
right.
What do you call it?
It was a fondue bar.
It's hard to make vegan fondue. So yeah. So he just recently scrapped the concept mm-hmm. and made it into a vegan tapas bar. But yeah, that again, you've done a lot of things that have resonated for a long time. And like, again, kind of pioneering. Like,
yeah. And that's, for me, what I've found the most fascinating or intrigued by is wherever I was working, if we were working as a team, even at Clover Club, you know, building a new seasonal menu together, it was kind of like, all right, so you guys are all working with Tanqueray this season, or you're all working with this liqueur. You know, there's always like some kind of trend and everybody's yeah. kind of vibing off of that. And so I was like, show me everything you've got so far and like, let me fill in those slots so we can look at a menu on the spectrum that is like diverse and like hitting all those marks, all those like, you know, something for everyone and all the spirits and flavor profiles, whether it be savory or spicy or sweet or rich or bitter. So I really like to kind of look at the bigger picture and kind of round everything out.
Right.
And, you know, I it could be a Scotch cocktail. It could be agave. I just felt comfortable enough that like I could see what was missing and want to fill in that blank. Yeah. And
I always find it interesting when it's a menu development time, when, you know, seasonally, it's like, It's really interesting getting into the whole staff's heads and like, you know, like you kind of take a peek into their
Their psyche.
Their psyche.
You get deep in it, especially what you do with the thematic menus. I feel like you're probably... That pulls out some weirdness. Nuance and weirdness.
Yeah, man. But, like, there's something to be said about looking at a cocktail from, like looking at a cocktail menu from a specific bar and seeing it change throughout the years, throughout the seasons, and you're like, oh, this is totally, like, I feel like Death & Company. It's like, this is a total Death & Company cocktail. It's, like, got every stirrable thing in it, you know?
Right.
Like, this is obviously an Amore Margo cocktail. This is... like a flat orange cocktail, like the Beijing Peach.
Right.
But Katie, you've always had a way, I can see one of your cocktails and taste one of your cocktails, and I'm like, oh, this is totally a Katie's type cocktail. And I want that to sound like a compliment, because it is.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, when we
were... Oh, because it has sherry in it? Right.
Yeah. Well, even before then, I mean, like, the Red Rock Canyon...
Yeah.
And then I remember we were texting back and forth about it. And you're like, just got to figure out the garnish. And then you text me like 2 seconds later and you're like, pink peppercorn. Boom. And you just dropped the mic.
Boom.
I was like, you know what? I could have seen that coming, actually. Like, yeah. Snow and Katie style.
Yeah. And you know, that's a big part of like what makes Grand Army so fun. And you know, we have access to so many bars in New York and it really is so saturated and everybody produces a seasonal menu. And, but I think that the thematic menu is such a unique journey and what makes Grand Army really like unique and special as well.
Thanks.
So, you know,
well, you're part of that.
Yeah, part of it.
You always will be.
But the Red Rock Canyon, yeah, that was a drink on what was the State Parks menu? The
State Parks of Oklahoma.
US. Oh, State Parks of Oklahoma.
Specifically Oklahoma.
Yeah. Got to get specific and weird, man.
I got it.
If you're going to get weird.
Right. Yeah.
Stay that way.
So, you know, it made sense that it would need to be a specific color of red. And yeah, I knew it needed an agave cocktail on the list. And it was like putting together like... you know, drinks that I love. Like, one of the greatest drinks I've ever had is the Angostura Collins at Cannon in Seattle. Mm. It's the Collins, but using Angostura bitters as the base spirit and lemon sugar soda. And then, you know, like hitting that with the Trinidad Sour and putting those two together and they emerge into this, like, really unique.
Yeah, with the orgeat and the orgeat lemon. Angostura and Reposado tequila.
Yeah.
And the East meets West.
On crushed ice in Collins House.
Yeah. Well, you know.
You know I can't say no to that.
Soon we're going to go back to Grand Army and I'll be slinging some drinks. So we'll make some Red Rock Canyons. Totally. And at La Serena, actually, just recently, I made a cobbler because being a Spanish concept, they're integrating, obviously, sherries because that makes sense. But taking that Red Rock Canyon format and template and replacing that with a Montiato sherry with like a heavy hit, like a half ounce of Angostura, lemon, and orgeat on crushed ice. And for me, like the sherry cobbler is one of the most lovely, lovely cocktails you can produce. And I'm always really proud when Dave Wondrick sits at my bar and orders a sherry cobbler because I always make it one way specifically. And that's like muddling a couple orange slices in cinnamon syrup, 3 ounces of Montiato sherry uncrushed and done. And it's a drink that just like continues to develop and open and as it dilutes and it's pure magic.
And if you get it at Grand Army, it comes in a boot. Get it? Cobbler.
Cobblers.
Damon and the puns.
That's our house spec now because of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As it should be.
As it should be.
Train the boys well.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah.
So we need to talk about what's next for Katie Stipe, because you alluded earlier in the show that you're breaking up with New York.
Yeah.
What the hell does that mean?
It's been an interesting couple months and few weeks coming to terms with that it's time to say goodbye to New York. And, you know, it makes everything far more sentimental and nostalgic, you know, even being here or seeing friends. Because it's like, is this the last time I get to do this? And walking through Grand Central yesterday, is this the last time I'll get to do this? And, yeah, it's it's time for me to see what else is out there and to change my environment and see if I still want to remain in hospitality. And I will certainly take that with me. And, you know, I do believe that what I do and the ability I have is completely universal, and I can take that to many places. And if anything, being a big fish in a little pond could be very advantageous.
Sure.
Advantageous. And, you know, and kind of going back to basics is very gratifying to explore. So, yeah, we'll see if hospitality is what I continue to explore, but it's more so like, you know, kind of letting go and seeing what else is out there and having the ability to travel again and afford to travel again.
Yeah. And that's how you're kicking this off, right? You're going to.
Yeah.
You do a little cross-country automobile tour, right?
There's going to be some, across the United States travel and checking out new cities, if that's maybe a place that I might eventually land. I don't know for sure. It's kind of stepping out into the unknown, and it's really damn scary. But at the same time, I know it's needed, because when things start to feel static and that you're like losing your imagination, or, you know, being a former artist, like, I know that there's other chapters for me to explore career-wise or artistically. It's taking, you know,
that's awesome.
A big leap and seeing what happens. And I'm sure what I do now, and it'll travel along with me. And, you know, there will be a trip to Spain. Absolutely. There's a trip of doing like North Green Spain that I've been putting off for years because, you know, whatever gig I was doing at the time, whether consulting or at Pig Beach or something seasonal, I just hadn't been able to make it happen. So, yeah, cool. It's all happening. It's all happening very quickly.
You
so
hitch my
it's,
wagon to that.
Yeah. You know, and you tell New Yorkers like, yeah, man, I'm getting out of here. I'm doing it. It's time. And, you know, you get different responses, you know, a lot of people saying like, yeah, I want to get out of here. Like,
Menvious.
I don't, you know, it's, you know, I've thought about that, or, you know, there's things keeping me here that don't allow me to do that. You know, whether it's family or career or
FOMO, lots of FOMO.
Yeah.
But you know what? Like
you leave New York, you fear missing out on a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, you just left for a week. I left for a week 2 weeks ago. Like, it's kind of nice to just disappear for a week.
Yeah. It's like, let's double down on that.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, we live very intense lives here. And so it's important to step away
After a certain point, though, I mean, like, I look at your decision and what you're doing now, and I'm just like, man, all right. Fucking bravo.
Right.
That was great. Like, came here and you crushed it for this whole time, and like, you made a huge name for yourself, you know, and like, there's no one that I know who doesn't know, like, that I talk about K-Step to, that they they're always and
I feel very grateful for the opportunities I've had and the people I've gotten to work with and meet throughout the process. And really what you miss most is New York.
It is
the greatest city.
But it's always going to be here, you know.
It's always going to be here.
You and I spoke before the show, and I said, I feel like, frankly, if I were to leave New York and just visit New York once a year for vacation, I would enjoy New York more than I do living here every day. I'd get to do New York.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
You come to New York, so, and you wouldn't have to write your landlord a check.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
A huge check.
And that's not, you know, that's not just why I'm leaving. It's just wanting to experience other cities and live in other places and know that I'm in a place in my life that, like, I know there's so much more out there, and I know there's other environments for me to, like, really flourish in, and I'm excited to see what that is going to look like. And, you know, there's the city girl of me, but I think very much so I'm a landscape, nature, fresh air kind of soul, and that's where I belong, and I kind of need to get out there and experience that. And,
totally. Well, I can't wait to come visit you wherever you land.
I invite all my pals to join along in a road trip once I find that. Cool. I don't know if it's the van life that I'll pursue, but, like, once I get that.
Well, you got to document it for us on your Instagram, et cetera. So we can see what's going on and where you're at.
Absolutely.
Speaking of you leaving, though.
Speaking of visiting, Katie.
Exactly. Let's visit today at 5 o'clock at Grand Army. You going to make some drinks, old and new, or just old?
yeah, it was piecing together, like, you know, kind of a body of work menu in a very, very, very abbreviated way, because it's me 2 hours, you know, getting in Kevin's way at Grand Army and, like, you know, jumping in that well. And I know it'll be complete chaos, but a total blast because I used to work there. So, but yeah, just kind of putting in some cocktails that, you know, siesta being one of them, putting in some sherry, you know, a little bit of like an influential My Little Pony moment, because talking about Grand Army theme menus, you know, that was always one I was rooting for, My Little Pony theme. I know you guys went with Gilmore Girls. That's totally fine. But I feel like My Little Pony and the pony drink names and sparkles and all of that just makes sense. So,
Skywishes.
Yeah, it'll, you know, just serving some drinks that, you know, come from, you know, different backgrounds of where I was working, and some sherry, some aquavit, some agave. And, you know, it's really just about seeing friends and the faces and, you know, having a good time. And that's kind of what our business is all about. So
that's today. Are you doing any other sort of, you know, swan songy shifts before you take off in a month?
Ooh, if I can manage that all.
Maybe you should come do a guest shift at Coup for charity.
Yeah, I would love to. And that's certainly on my roster. Like I said, I have just kind of the New York bucket list of things to do. And this today is one of them. And Coup, I would love to be a part of. I love getting behind a bar that I've never worked at before and, you know, being challenged by its elements and the elements that are working against you, and just like let her rip and make drinks. So I would definitely like to be a part of that. Cool. You know, the days are going by quite quickly, but yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love to. I'd love to shake some drinks for you since, you know.
Since I can't. Yeah. Well, let's take a look at the calendar today, maybe after the show, and we'll see if we can squeeze you in. I hope we can. You can come do some saying goodbye to people as well as doing some good charity work. We're having a great time over there. Speaking of that, I'm going to plug that for a second. Next week starts Negroni Week. We're kicking it off at Coup with a big Negroni party sponsored by Campari on Monday. Paul Clark is going to be our guest on Wednesday. Oh. Paul Clark from Imbibe Magazine is going to get behind the bar.
Fellow Oki.
And make some drinks. Yes, he's an Oki. That's right.
Yeah, I'll be in L.A. on Monday for the Negroni Week launch at Girl at the White Horse with my best of gal pal friends, a fellow Gemini sister, Cabell Tomlinson. So
nice.
The Twin Towers, as we were deemed by Julie Reiner at Flatiron Lounge, me and my other 6-foot gal pal will be slinging drinks in LA for Negroni Week and for charity for Share, which is a community of raising money for women with breast cancer and ovarian cancer. So. Great. And pairing awesome. Up with Speed Rack too, as well. So,
yeah. Heck yeah, man.
That's awesome.
I've only been a girl at the White Horse once, and it was with you and Cabell and Gino Pillerman, and it was before service hours, and we just hung out. And it's a beautiful place.
We ate tacos and drank beer.
Yep, it was great.
What a life! Tacos and beer.
Whole place to ourselves.
Nice. So nice to have you on the show today. Thanks for bringing the sherry for us to taste and all your stories. I got a couple of things to talk about real fast. We got some fan mail.
Yeah.
You and I.
I see that.
We got a very nice thank you letter from Nick Korn, who was our guest a few weeks ago from Boston.
Cool.
Thanking us for being on the show, which is really nice.
Thanks,
but
Nick.
But this one, yeah. But
it was
this
a lot of fun having him in.
This one's even cooler. This young lady named Sarah Becton. Sent us a little package of the stuff she made. She's crafty. She makes these cocktail recipe cards. I've got a stack of them for you, Damon. You can check them out.
I haven't seen that.
You can maybe use them to build a cocktail recipe thing. But the funny thing about her letter, she says she's a bartender on the West Coast, and she makes crafty things. And she says, we're such a fan of your show. My husband even refers to you guys by first name. But she doesn't mention his name. So Sarah and your husband, thanks for listening and being part of the show. And then just a few notes about what's upcoming next week. Jeffries, what's his first name again?
Henry Jeffries.
Henry Jeffries from the book Empire Booze, We're going to have that show on, which is going to be great. He's got a lot of history of booze and how it affected
the UK
and how it kind of affected the map of the world, frankly. Sure. Following week, Darren Grenier from Your Sincerely, where they've got this just incredible cocktail program, and it's all on tap. This guy is just breaking the bubble on tap cocktails. The following week, Tanya Guffey. And I think I'm going to try and sneak and see if she can bring Jackson with her. Maybe he'll bring us some snacks. Her man Jackson is the sous chef over at Employees Only.
Snacks and Jackson.
And then the following week we got Kyle and Rachel Ford that are going to come on and talk about their kind of new career as they've kind of left brand ambassadorships behind and become their own company, Ford Mixology, Ford Marketing Lab.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah. Cool, man.
A lot of cool stuff coming up.
I can't wait to write a cocktail recipe on this card.
Yeah, it's great.
It's actually double-sided, so we can make two.
Yeah, it's got the thing where you can
do that at the happy hour.
Got the thing where you can circle the glassware, and like they're pretty cool. Thanks, Sarah. Cool.
Yeah, it's like Sarah. Mom's old recipe Rolodex, you know, on the index cards.
Totally. Yeah, I'm wondering if she makes like a cool box to put them in. Mm-hmm. She sent us a big stack of them.
Maybe her husband, without a name, makes boxes.
Well, she says in her letter that she does the crafty stuff. So.
Okay. Well, maybe they're a team.
They're a team.
They found each other somehow.
That's right. She married her best friend.
Yeah, that's what you're supposed to do.
Such a delight to have you on. You're so graceful and charming, and we're gonna really miss you in New York City. But we're gonna look forward to everything you do when you leave here. So thanks for being on the show today.
Oh, I'm really happy to be here and drink sherry with you guys. And
yeah. If you like this show, tune in to Heritage Radio Network to listen to thousands more just like it.
And thousands.
Again, thanks so much for joining us, Katie. Cheers.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers, guys. Drink more sherry.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you some.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.